as the airstrikes continue. President Biden says he hopes an invasion doesn't happen, but seems unwilling to tell the Israelis what any consequences might be if they go ahead. How should the West respond if there is indeed a ground invasion in the near future? At 8 on Cross Question, former Cabinet Minister Anne-Marie Trevelyan, pollster Scarlett Maguire, and former Conservative Special Advisor Tom Skinner. And at 9, Tom Lockyer is the captain of Luton Town Football Club. In December last year, he had a heart attack on the pitch. He received CPR and is now part of a British Heart Foundation campaign to increase CPR training. Have you ever needed CPR? And how has a heart attack impacted you and your family?
On your radio, on Global Player, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, Joe Biden has renewed calls for a ceasefire between Israel and Hezbollah as he confirmed he's sending a few thousand additional troops to the Middle East to boost security. There are mixed reports that Israeli troops are about to launch a limited ground incursion into Lebanon, and it could happen as soon as tonight. Andrew Mitchell, Shadow Foreign Secretary, is told tonight with Andrew Marr he doubts Israel will do as Mr. Biden asks.
At this moment, having a ceasefire when they've got Hezbollah on the run would seem to me to be a very surprising course of military action.
Well, Jeffrey Feltman's a former US ambassador to Lebanon and told Andrew Marr there's a clear split between Hezbollah and the Lebanese government.
Hezbollah has said that they will continue to fire into Israel despite the losses until there's a ceasefire in Gaza. The Lebanese government is now saying we want to be part of the implementation of that Security Council resolution from 2006, which is clearing the area of southern Lebanon from all armed elements except for the Lebanese armed forces.
After more than 100 years, traditional steelmaking in South Wales has ended this evening. The last furnace at Tata Steel in Port Talbot has shut with the loss of thousands of jobs. Alan Davis, National Officer for Steel for the Community Union, told LBC he can't believe it's come to this.
It is difficult, more difficult than what I thought it would be. And yeah, it's devastating for the people that work inside there. 2,000 people in Port Talbot will be displaced and families demolished. It's hard to comprehend at the moment.
And Councillor Rob Jones, who's leader of the Labour group on Neath Port Talbot Council, told tonight with Andrew Marr this will affect the entire community.
Although Port Talbot existed for many, many years, it has been built up and known as Steel Town. There is not one person that you can speak to is not some way connected with working in the steelworks, have relationships, neighbours. This is historical in generations and it impacts on the wider community.
The UK's last remaining coal-fired power station near Nottingham is also closed today. The switch off at Ratcliffe-on-Soar brings to an end Britain's use of burning coal to produce energy. The UK's top civil servant, Simon Case, has confirmed he will step down at the end of the year on health grounds. There have been reports of tensions between Mr. Case and Keir Starmer's chief of staff, Sue Gray, but he says that has nothing to do with his decision. Liz Truss has told the Tory party conference the Conservatives would have fared better at the general election if she'd still been the leader.
If the mini budget had been allowed to succeed, you know, we'd have lower corporation tax, bringing more companies into this country, not relocating to Ireland. We'd have duty-free shoppers coming to London rather than being diverted to Paris or Milan.
She was Britain's shortest-serving prime minister, lasting just 49 days in office. And members of the largest education union in the UK have voted to accept the government's 5.5% pay rise for teachers in England. In a snap poll, 95% of national education union members agreed to take it. Last year, they staged 8 days of strike action in state schools as part of their fight for more money. In the city, the FTSE 100 closed down 50 points at 82.70. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.19. LBC weather staying wet and windy in the east of England overnight. Drier with clear spells elsewhere and lows of 3 degrees. For tomorrow, staying cloudy and windy in the east, largely dry elsewhere with bright spells and highs of 17. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Jenny Barsby.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ian Dale.
Hello, a very good evening. It's 4 minutes past seven on LBC. It's Ian Dale here with you until 10. Now, we could have talked about the Conservative Party conference and their leadership contest in this hour, but I think events in the Middle East really trump that. So we're going to spend this hour talking about the fact that it seems as though, and I know we said this last week, but it does now seem as though a ground invasion of Lebanon by Israel is more likely than not. Now, a US official confirmed to CBS News today that Israel has notified the US that it intends to launch what it calls a limited ground incursion into Lebanon, which officials say could begin within hours. Now, as of right now, this is the Israeli Defense Forces spokesman Major David Baruch. He told reporters in Israel this afternoon, as of right now, I can say there are no major ground activities in Lebanon. But one of his colleagues, Captain Adam Itar, quickly added, but all options are on the table. Now, it seems as though President Biden has been notified that a ground invasion could well happen very soon. But he doesn't seem to be willing to actually say to the Israelis, absolutely not, you will not do this. And of course, if we think back to 1982, that's exactly what Ronald Reagan told the Israeli Prime Minister then, that they'd gone too far and all this must stop. Now, my view, as you will remember if you were listening last week, is that the Israelis have every right to respond to the aggression posed by Hezbollah over the last week or so. Well, in fact, much longer than the last week or so, when hundreds, if not thousands, of rockets have been fired into Israel from Hezbollah's strong points in Lebanon. I don't know what people expect the Israeli government to do. I mean, do they really expect them to just turn the other cheek and not do anything? Israel has a right to defend its properties. And they have used targeted airstrikes in Lebanon. They seem to have used other means as well. Remember the walkie-talkies and the pagers, to disable Hezbollah. And as Andrew Mitchell said in that clip on the news, they've got Hezbollah on the run. So it's totally unrealistic. Anyone who knows anything about modern military warfare knows you don't pull back when you have the enemy on the run. And that, it seems to me, is the situation in Israel at the moment. Now, the former Defence Secretary, Grant Shapps, is here in Birmingham attending the Conservative Party conference. LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, spoke to him this afternoon to get his view on the prospect of Israel escalating this conflict.
Well, I think Israel's in a terrible situation because they've got rockets being fired by Hezbollah in on a daily basis. It often, just doesn't get reported in our news. And what is this tiny, small democracy about the size of Wales supposed to do? Just allow these rockets to continually fire at them with no action? And they've been suffering this for a very long time. The Hezbollah haven't sort of complied with the UN Resolution 1701 to pull back from the border. And so eventually, I guess they've got fed up with it. Now, I very much hope this can be over. I support the calls for a ceasefire, but a ceasefire has to work in both directions. The rockets can't continue.
It sounds like you're saying that you would support Israel's right to launch this ground incursion.
Well, I just understand their right not to be fired on all day long by a bunch of terrorists. And by the way, Hezbollah are recognised by Britain as a terrorist organisation.
But where does this end if this begins?
Well, that's, I don't really want it to begin, obviously, and I'd much rather see an immediate ceasefire, both sides respect. But Hezbollah can't, at the behest of Iran, and those are the people who are making this happen, continuously destabilise the region. And Iran, again, at the heart of all this, exactly the same as with Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthis, all involved, along with Iranian-backed militias in Syria, in Iraq, and, of course, Iran itself firing on Israel.
That was Grant Shapps, the former Defence Secretary, talking to Natasha Clark. Well, our reporter Charlotte Lynch has been at a press conference this afternoon, I think with some of the families of the hostages in Gaza. Charlotte, very good evening. I imagine that was a pretty moving affair.
Well, it was, Ian, because it came as the news broke that this Israeli ground invasion of Lebanon is imminent. In fact, as that news broke, these four British citizens whose family members have either been killed or are still being held hostage by Hamas in Gaza were answering questions just about that. Now, I asked one of them, Sharon Lifshitz, whose parents were kidnapped on October the 7th, and she still doesn't know if her father's alive. Her mother's thankfully been returned. I asked her about how she felt about this war now raging north of the Israeli border.
Hamas have been made strong over many years by several parties. I think Hezbollah has grown strong over several years. That's another timeline. But it takes away from the hostages. They're there. And if there's a ground in question, they will all... They've been telling us that nothing will happen for 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 5 weeks. So we are in a losing battle. We have been on this mudslide for a year.
Well, they had just met with the Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer, and the Foreign Secretary, David Lammy, urging them to do more to help secure the return of the hostages. In fact, they told them that they want the British government to put a deal on the table with Hamas and push for the release of their loved ones. They want the UK to be part of negotiations, but they don't believe that that's going to happen whilst the war in the Middle East continues. They're also very critical of Benjamin Netanyahu, accusing the Israeli Prime Minister of failing to have the return of the hostages as his top priority, as he's repeatedly insisted. Stephen Brisley's brother and nephews, who were both British citizens, were murdered by Hamas on the 7th of October. Of course, that one-year anniversary in a week's time. And he told reporters what he thought of his government's actions.
The Israeli government has consistently said from the 8th of October onwards that the hostages are the number one priority. That's not the impression I get at the moment, nor over the past 3, 4, 5, 6 months, because if the hostages were the first priority, then a deal would have been done by now.
Well, they told us their meeting with Keir Starmer was truthful. They said they felt encouraged, that he listened carefully. And the Prime Minister is said to have insisted that the government would redouble its efforts to push for a ceasefire and the release of the hostages. But the families went as far as to say to me that they want a guarantee from the British government that they see these hostages that remain with these strong British links as their problem. Treat them as if they are their own, Sharon Lifshitz said, and find any way possible to secure their return. But they're not confident of that while the situation escalates in Lebanon.
Charlotte, thank you. That's Charlotte Lynch, LBC's reporter. Let's speak to Tobias Elwood, the former UK Middle East and North Africa minister. Tobias, very good evening to you. Now, with this news this afternoon about an apparent imminent ground invasion, they say it's going to be limited. I mean, what do they mean by that, do you think?
Well, good evening. I mean, I'm pleased that you've mentioned, or emphasis has been placed on those hostages, because that was the start of all this back in September, October the 7th. And the question is for Israel. Absolutely agree. It has a right to defend itself. But how it utilizes its superior military force does matter. And in Gaza, we've not seen a strategy that sees the return of those hostages and provides the long-term governance and security that we require. Likewise, I would say with Hezbollah as well. And nobody is in control of events. Things are escalating. And that's why America and indeed Britain have called for a ceasefire. There'll be huge consequences if Iran gets involved, which I think they now will do. And as well as the Houthis in Yemen, we'll see the Red Sea likely close down again. And the Straits of Hormuz, where a third of the world's oil comes out as well. So going back to Israel, agree that it needs to use force in some way. In answer to your question, a limited invasion up to the Litani River, which is about 30 kilometers in Lebanon, would be the logical move, the strategic move to give them the buffer zone. Interestingly, there is a UN resolution, 1701, that actually demands this, that Hezbollah should move back to that location. It's a failure of the West over decades that we've not enforced that. That is part of the equation that we're dealing with today.
Why is it a failure of the West? It's a failure of the UN.
Sorry, the two are the same. Yes?
Well,
the
not.
Custodians... Well, we wrote the rules-based order post the war, of which the United Nations is absolutely part of. If we don't, if participating nations supporting the United Nations don't insist on enforcing the resolutions such as 1701, then we see Hezbollah push down towards the south and continually bombard Israel on top of what Israel is having to deal with in Gaza. So to say the UN is something separate, sorry, I don't agree with you with that.
With your military background, what do you think? Do you think that the Israelis are adopting a very different strategy towards Hezbollah than they've adopted towards Hamas? It seems much more targeted than the sort of bombings in Gaza.
I think they took Hamas for granted and they were caught very much on the back foot, and they've tried to catch up, but they still don't have a strategy, as I suggest. With Hezbollah, they've been planning this for a long time. The pager and walkie-talkie attacks are illustration of that. They're precision targeting, taking out Hezbollah leaders, military and political as well, is also indication of that. But I stress, and I say this as a former military person, the military is a tool to be used for a mission, to achieve a type of victory, a strategy that then takes you there. And that's the question that I think the Americans are asking Israel today. So for Israel to now push in, as I say, to create that buffer zone, to protect northern Israel, because they've had to evacuate tens of thousands of people, that is a logical step forward. And as I stress, we could have helped in this over the last couple of decades. We've allowed Iran to develop its proxy influence over this period, which has destabilized the Middle East. To compound matters, behind Hezbollah clearly sits Iran, but now behind Iran sits Russia. Iran has been helping Russia out in Ukraine, sending missile systems and drones that way. They could well be then being moved to go the other way if this war is seen to escalate, which is why, as I say, nobody's in control of events. The situation is very, very dangerous indeed. And the United Nations, or indeed any other nation, or United States as well, are not in control of where things may now go.
Could President Biden say to Prime Minister Netanyahu, up with this, you will not launch a ground invasion?
He does not have the power and influence to do so. And we saw that with the initial attacks that took place, not just with the pager and walkie-talkies, but those other strikes that took place deep into Beirut. The Americans, I understand, were not informed. The fact that they're now communicating is important. Israel's most closest security ally is the United States. President Biden, I think, from a personal perspective, doesn't want to hand over to his successor another war, which is why he's been hesitant in Ukraine to confirm and legitimize the use of attackums or storm shadows and so forth. So he's playing a very, very cautious game, which again is unhelpful too. What we need to do is to make sure that a buffer zone is created, the UN resolution is adopted in full, but we also need to get back to the start of this, which is a ceasefire in Gaza. And that, I hope, then will lead to some of those hostages finally being returned.
In 1982, President Reagan, I think he did say to the Israeli Prime Minister, enough, stop. And it did. Does the fact that you think that President Biden won't do that or can't do that indicate that the American influence on Israel has diminished over the years?
You raise an important point, and it's interesting to go back to that date in time when Israel did invade Lebanon. That was the formation of Hezbollah. And make it clear, this is an Islamic militant group, the most powerful non-state actor in the world, who are committed to die for their cause. Martyrdom is part of what they do. The party is called the Party of God. But you're right to say, I think President Reagan in those days had far more clout than I'm afraid President Biden does as well. And you've seen that with the relationship between Netanyahu and indeed the White House as well. Complicating this, of course, is the internal politics of Israel and Netanyahu's own position. It's a complicated matter. Getting this buffer zone in place, I think, could be the start. But ultimately, it would be good to see efforts to return round the table to provide that ceasefire in Gaza. That would allow escalation right across the piece. But at the moment, if Iran gets involved and starts using their missile systems, then we're going to see full war in the Middle East.
Tobias, thank you very much indeed. That's Tobias Elwood there, the former UK Middle East and North Africa minister. Well, let's take that warning that Tobias Elwood just issued there. Do you fear that a wider regional conflict is going to happen? Do you think it's inevitable? What could stop it? Do you think the Americans are being, or should we say a little bit weak? I put that mildly in their response here, because they could, I think, be a little bit more emphatic. I'm not sure it matters what Britain and the EU says here. The Americans are the key players. What would you like President Biden to do? What would you like Prime Minister Netanyahu to do? 0345 6060 973. You can, of course, text us on 85 84 850. You're listening to LBC. I'm Ian Dale. It's 18 minutes past 7.
This is LBC.
It's 2024. We can use robots to clean our flats. Order Kung Pao Chicken with our watches. And, hey, play my tune.
Playing your playlist.
And now there's a better way to do energy. With OVO's energy savings account, Beyond, you could save cash today and bank greener rewards for tomorrow. Now that's a first. Search OVO Beyond. Discounts include bill savings by using energy at greener times. Smart meter required. For terms and eligibility, search OVO Beyond.
With the biggest range of cars to buy entirely online, it's no wonder everyone's cinching it.
I cinched it during spin class. Think I'm going to be sick.
I cinched it in this coffee shop.
What are you having?
A five-door hatchback.
This is your captain speaking. I cinched it before takeoff with a 14-day money-back guarantee.
With so many great reasons to buy, the nation aren't just nailing it, they're cinching it. Comparison against equivalent retailers. Visit cinch.co.uk/range claim. Mileage restrictions and terms apply.
The plant near the reception desk at Axel's Autocare is loving life. Because since Axel started taking card payments with Barclaycard, he's got the money in his account the next day, with no hidden fees. So he spends less time waiting and more time watering. What's good for small business is good for everyone. Barclaycard Payments.
Settlement terms may vary. To receive next day settlement, transactions need to be taken before 9 p.m. for Flex and before 7 p.m. for Smart Pay Anywhere and Smart Pay Touch. T's and C's apply.
Ian Dale, text 84850. This is LBC.
20 past 7, anonymous texter, of course, they always are. You are an abomination and an embarrassment, Ian Dale. Thank you very much. Blowing the arms and legs off small children is not self-defence. What is the matter with you? I don't know how many more times one has to explain this sort of thing, but in any act of military warfare, in any act of military self-defence, however targeted it is, and I do think the targets, it's been very targeted in Lebanon, unlike in Gaza, there will always be civilian casualties. When we bombed German cities during the Second World War, I mean, those bombings were not particular, well, some of them were targeted, but many were not. We have grown morally weak, I think, because if you take a pacifist point of view, fine, feel free to send a text like that, because you therefore think that military action can never be justified under any circumstances. Well, I don't agree with that point of view, but I understand that some people hold it. But if you hold that point of view, then be prepared for your country to be bombed or invaded. Defensive actions, which is what I believe the Israeli military are taking in Lebanon, will inevitably sometimes result in innocent people dying. I don't approve of that, but I recognise that it will happen. And I'm only sorry that you can't sort of, you just throw these insults around when you have no understanding whatsoever of what this conflict seems to be all about. This is not Israel being the aggressor against Hezbollah. Hezbollah is a proscribed terrorist organisation, and we all know what it's done over the past decades. Right, let's go to your calls. Melissa is in Peckham. Hello, Melissa.
Yes, I agree partly with you, but I didn't agree with your previous person who said about Reagan. Now, you can compare today with those times, because we've had a president like Trump and a prime minister like Boris Johnson with no morals. I just think it's very sad. I can't pronounce his name, the prime minister of Israel, and I think they're also terrorists.
Well, I mean, How do you define a terrorist? I mean, the Israeli government is elected democratically. Hezbollah has never faced an election anywhere.
Well, the way Israel is acting is on par with terrorism.
No, it isn't.
Well, for me it is. It may be not for you.
Well,
sitting in your chair.
Well, imagine.
Hold on now. You have your say and I'm going to have my say. Mm-hmm. Seeing innocents being bombed, for me, is terrorism. You're terrorising people, regardless whether they're a democratic country. And I blame the media for winding it all up. They've got a right to defend themselves. And that's that's what they're doing. They don't care. And I do blame the media for stirring this up. It might, you've given them carte blanche to carry out their atrocities.
Well, where do I start? Put yourself in the position of an Israeli prime minister. Forget whether it's Netanyahu. Just imagine you are the imagine you are the Israeli prime minister, and you have a terrorist organization like Hezbollah every day sending rockets into northern Israel and now reaching Tel Aviv and Jerusalem as well. What would you do, Melissa?
What I would do is not what they're doing.
That's not an answer.
Because no, I'm not. I can't answer because I'm not over that country, and all I know is the Palestinian people are second-class citizens on their own land. They're treated abominably, and that is my opinion.
But you're unable to say what Israel should do. Because I think any prime...
No. What I would say is a democratic society, as they keep saying, and as you keep telling me...
Well, they are.
And everyone...
it's not an opinion, it's a fact. Because they hold elections. Arab Israelis have every right to vote in those elections and do vote in those elections. There are Arab Israelis in the Knesset.
Well, a lot of what they're doing, for me, is... out-and-out terrorism. And that is what I believe...
Just because you keep saying it doesn't make it true.
Well, it's true for me. It might not be true for you. I mean, you're very casual when you talk about children and women
I'm not casual at all. All I'm trying to explain, and maybe I'm not explaining it very well, but you and I both know that in any war, that innocent people are, that horrible phrase, collateral damage. In war. I'm not saying that's a good thing. I'm just saying that is what war is like. And you can never fight a war without having civilian casualties. I'm afraid warfare is not like that. Now, as I say, if you're a pacifist, fine, you're going to condemn that. But if we had taken the attitude, well, we can't possibly launch any missile in self-defense because it might kill some innocent people, we would never have fought any battles in our history. And again, you might think that was a good thing.
I think it's a good thing. I think it's a good thing with all these leaders, you know.
Well, fine. Then we would be speaking German in this country now, not English, if your attitude had prevailed in the Second World War.
You know what, right? Stop it. Stop going backward, trying to go forward. You know, don't compare what happened.
If you don't learn from history, you repeat it.
That is why we're still fighting wars, because we are still, you know, don't think because we're in a so-called first world country, we are very uncivilized. Very uncivilized. And that is all of us. And that is why we're still fighting wars. And selling arms.
We're fighting wars to protect our way of life and our democracies. That's why we're doing it.
Because we're uncivilised.
No.
There's enough in this world to go around for everyone. We're greedy, war, selling arms to each other, bombing kids, hospitals, and whatever. And that is how I see the world.
Well, you see the world in a very idealistic way. You see the world in a very idealistic way. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm not going to criticise you for it. But in reality... you have to deal with situations as they arise. And if a country is, if a terrorist organisation is bombing your country the whole time, then you've got to eliminate them.
Yeah, and Israel don't do anything at all? They're so innocent?
No, I'm not saying that at all. Melissa, I've said over the last few months that I think their actions in Gaza have been completely over the top. It hasn't been targeted in the way that they promised. I think Netanyahu's motives in a lot of these things are questionable, to say the least. So I can see the failings of the Israeli government as well. But I don't sit here and think that they should just lie back and take it when Hezbollah tried to bomb them the whole time.
But I'm not going to say every day, sitting in your privileged position, Israel got a right... whoever it is, be it Israel, they've got a right to defend themselves. And that is why...
Yeah.
But you keep repeating it. And so are those Gazans and Palestinian people got a right to a life. You know, why don't you repeat that every day? And about the settlers.
Well, I... And I
no,
I've,
no, no, no,
I,
because you
no,
can't.
No, don't ask me a question and then sort of talk over me. I have consistently criticised the illegal settlements on the West Bank. So don't try and throw that one at me.
Well, then you need to say it more and louder.
I've said it very often.
Well, I don't think so, and I think...
Well, I know what I've said. You aren't listening to every single minute of what I say, I'm sure, but I can assure you that I've consistently criticised that. I've criticised the untargeted bombings in Gaza, and I've criticised Netanyahu. I try and look at this from as an objective position as I can. You clearly don't like the fact that I consistently say that Israel has a right to defend itself. It had to defend itself after the attacks on October the 7th. 1,200 of its innocent citizens killed by terrorists. And if you don't think that's worth responding to, we'll disagree.
What about all the part? Never mind about that. That is terrible.
Oh, never mind about that. Really?
No.
Is that where you've got
no.
to? Never mind
no,
about
no, no,
the
no,
fact
no.
that 1,200
no, no,
innocent
no.
people were killed.
No, 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 no. I said put that aside. That
yeah, you can't.
Dreadful.
You can't because
absolutely
that was what
dreadful.
Started this.
But I'm talking about what have happened since. Because
yeah.
I'm the sort of person who would like to go forward. Like the other people said, what about the hostages that are still being held?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah,
well,
they
keep getting forgotten, don't they?
No, I haven't forgotten about them.
Nor have I. Well, shall
no,
we end on that point of
them.
Agreement?
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't. But what I'm saying is we're uncivilised.
Well,
all
again.
Of us. Because we're, yeah, no, because we're still fighting wars. Every President Biden, whoever, we're all uncivilised. Uncivilised.
Well, I think that's the wrong
yeah.
word.
No,
I really
we are
think that is the wrong word.
Well, whatever you, that is my
okay.
opinion.
All right, fair enough. Well, Melissa, you probably won't think so, but I've enjoyed our chat. Clearly you haven't. Okay, thank you very much indeed. We'll come to more of your calls in a moment. And we're going to be talking to the Tory MP, Andrew Stevenson, about the Tory Leadership Contest too. It's 7:31 on LBC. Let's get the news headlines from Jenny Barsby.
Joe Biden's again called for an immediate ceasefire between Israel and Hezbollah as there are mixed reports that Israeli troops are about to launch a limited ground incursion into Lebanon. The president's also confirmed he's sending a few thousand additional troops to the Middle East to boost security. Traditional steel making has now come to an end in South Wales after more than 100 years. The last furnace at Tata Steel in Port Talbot has shut this evening with the loss of thousands of jobs. And the threat of teacher strikes at schools in England could be over. Members of the National Education Union have this evening backed the government's 5.5% pay rise. LBC weather staying wet and windy in the east overnight, clear elsewhere with lows of 3 degrees.
This is LBC.
Okay, which is clearer? One or two?
Two.
Three or four?
Four.
Diabetes or high blood pressure?
Huh?
Every eye tells a story, including giving us a clearer picture of your overall health. At Boots Opticians, our eye tests and advanced OCT eye scans can help spot over 10 health conditions, helping to open your eyes to a healthier future. Book an eye test today. Boots Opticians. See what's possible.
Buy parts of a new wind farm and generate your own low-cost greener energy with Ripple. Joining Ripple could cut your energy bills every year for decades. Without the hassle of getting solar panels installed onto your home or business. Your own energy to wherever you live. Even if you move home. That's real climate action to be proud of. Join now to be part of our next wind farm. Welcome to Ripple. Ripple Energy.
Did you know you could get the winter fuel payment or the equivalent in Scotland if you get pension credit? Pension credit is worth on average £3,900 per year and gives you help with other living costs. It's for people aged 66 or over and on a low income. Check the online eligibility calculator today to see if you're entitled. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. Eligibility criteria apply.
Ian Dale on LBC.
7.33 on LBC. We'll come back to your calls on Israel in just a moment. But first, Andrew Stevenson is the former Conservative MP and Minister who's supporting James Cleverly's party leadership campaign. He joins me now from the Conservative Conference. Andrew, very good evening. Now, obviously, you had four candidates to choose who to support. Why have you picked James Cleverly?
So I know all four candidates really well, and I think they are strong candidates. But for me, James is just by far the most experienced. He's held two great offices of state as Foreign Secretary and as Home Secretary. He's a former party chairman. He's somebody who I genuinely believe can unite the party. And for me, therefore, he is the outstanding choice and the best choice for both MPs and hopefully getting into the final two, the membership.
Let me put a different perspective to you, because I think if you were choosing a new leader during a time when you were in government, everything you've just said would be very true and worth considering. I'm not saying it isn't worth considering, but you know what I mean. But when you've suffered a huge election defeat and you need to take the party in a new direction, while experience is all well and good, I think, aren't people looking for a fresher face, somebody who maybe hasn't been right at the top of the previous government and therefore doesn't have to bear as much responsibility for the shambles that it turned into?
Well, when I was standing in the general election, one thing that came up time and time again was the need to have party unity, the need to have a sense of mission. For me, James is somebody who, by serving loyally under successive prime ministers, has demonstrated that loyalty to the Conservative cause, that loyalty to getting the job done. When so many others were fighting and joining different factions in the party, James was just a doer. He's somebody who, therefore, you know, I think actually that's what members are looking for, is somebody who's going to draw a line under the bickering and somebody who's going to take the party forward as a united party, which, yes, you know, we have significant lessons to learn from what was a bruising and historic defeat. But I think he is the right person to bring the party together, to deliver that party unity, and then say, right, how do we learn lessons and how do we convince the British public that their priorities are our priorities and we're not going to just descend into more internal squabbling?
Tom Tugendhat and Kemi Badenoch both resigned at the sort of the denouement of the Boris Johnson administration. Robert Jenrick resigned, he's resigned twice, hasn't he? Once during Boris Johnson's government and then when Rishi Sunak was Prime Minister over the issue of immigration. James Cleverly hasn't resigned at all. His hands were really sort of dipped in the blood of the Johnson administration right at the end, weren't they? He stood by Boris Johnson right to the end. Now, is that something that is saleable to the electorate?
Well, I represented for 14 years a North of England seat, and you know Boris Johnson has still remained very popular in my constituency. But you know, I myself was loyal to Theresa May all the way through until her position became untenable. I was loyal to Boris Johnson. I think actually one thing the party needs to rediscover is loyalty. I think you know the public are sick of the psychodrama and sick of MPs squabbling amongst themselves, seeming to you know be jockeying for position. And therefore, to me, what we need is that unifying figure. And you know, yes, some people will say fresh face, move on, but actually, you know, all the candidates have served in previous Conservative governments. They all have baggage. I just genuinely believe that James is the most experienced. He's one that has shown loyalty. He's one who's put party unity and stability first. And I believe, particularly during his tenure as party chairman in the run-up to the 2019 general election, he showed how he could involve members across the country and deliver Conservative wins, and that's basically what we want to find. We want to pick a leader who is a winner.
James Cleverly has said today that the Stop the Boat slogan was an error. Now, it's all very well to say that when you're out of power. Wouldn't it be more powerful if he tried to use his influence within government to stop that kind of slogan being used?
Well, James Cleverly, when he was Home Secretary, delivered a reduction in net migration, and I think that's what the public want to see. They want to see migration being brought down to sustainable levels.
Well, that, again, is a concern. 700,000 last year.
Indeed, but during his tenure, it was a net reduction. And
it wasn't. Seriously, it wasn't. I mean, 700,000 was the highest ever.
We James Cleverly, compared to what we have seen post-Brexit, there has been a significant rise. And a lot of that is things that I would happily defend, considering the war in Ukraine and us opening our doors with the Homes for Ukraine scheme and Hong Kong refugees and various other. There are the various reasons why net migration to this country has seen a significant increase. But with some of the things that James Cleverly implemented, which we are now seeing the benefits of, you know, he is somebody who has recognised the concerns of the public and has started to deliver. Yes, we have to do more, but that is the thing. Before, when he was working as part of other people's administrations, he was part of that administration, he was bound by collective responsibility. I believe that James, as leader, would be able to deliver the reductions in migration the British public want to see in a balanced and sustainable way.
He's also said today, lockdowns were wrong. We got it badly, badly, badly wrong. I mean, again, he was a senior cabinet minister. Did he speak up at the time to say that he thought lockdowns were wrong?
Well, I wasn't a senior cabinet minister. I was a minister of state during the pandemic in transport, so I wasn't in those discussions. I know there was an active discussion at the time amongst the cabinet, amongst the backbenchers. Obviously, lockdowns were one of the most unconservative things we had to do. But, you know, many people believed at the time it was the right thing to do. I think, you know, the whole reason why we have a COVID inquiry and other investigations going on at the moment is to say, was it the right thing to do? How can we learn lessons? And I think a lot of people on reflection now would say lockdowns, you know, were they the right thing to do? Did we lock down at the right time? Was it heavy-handed? Is the mental health impacts and others? But, you know, they are matters that will be up for debate for many years to come. And I know there are very strong opinions on whether the right actions were taken or not. At the time, all ministers, including James, the overriding principle was, what do we need to do to save lives?
He's also said we were harsh and shrill and not nice, and said that the party needs to change its tone and that will help win back voters from the Lib Dems. And I think that's entirely right. But there's also got to be a dramatic change in the policy offering, hasn't there? What is the most radical change in policy that James Cleverly is offering?
Well, James is offering a range of things, but most importantly at the moment, as we are in the party conference and he's making his appeal to membership, is that we need to listen and learn properly about why we were defeated so badly at the last general election. There's lots of people saying why it was, but we need to understand, we need to review how things went so badly wrong. This was a historic defeat for the party. There is no sugarcoating it. So we've got to understand that. We've got to reconnect with sections of society like young people who have simply stopped voting for the Conservative Party, and we've got to understand their concerns, understand their priorities, and ensure that we are then developing a policy platform that appeals to people across the country. He's not standing saying he has all the answers. He wants to bring everybody, involve all the talents in the party, have all the best talents in a shadow cabinet, and ensure that we are learning the lessons from what has been a historic and bruising defeat.
Andrew, thank you. That's Andrew Stevenson, the former Conservative MP and Minister. Right, let's go back to your calls on Israel. Raphael is in Tel Aviv. Hello, Raphael.
Hey, and what's up? Thank you for having me.
Not at all. What would you like to say?
So I think one of your questions in the beginning was if war and incursion into Lebanon is inevitable. And the answer is it is inevitable from two main reasons. The first reason, and you talked about it a lot, about our hostages. And believe me, nobody except the Israelis want them more at home than us. But since the beginning of the war, the dream of the Hamas leader, Yahya Sinwar, was to see the unification of the front. Lebanon, Gaza, Iran, and the Houthis, this was the dream. He expected everybody to rise up to the occasion after October the 7th. And until we will not clear this option from the table, I think it will always be the main reason why we will not get to a ceasefire. The second thing is, I don't know if people know that, but about seven kilometers from the border in north of Israel, all the towns are a complete ghost town. Nobody lives there anymore. All the people were evacuated. We are basically refugees in our own country. And after October the 7th, I think no family with kids with their right minds will agree to live on the border with an organization which is officially declared as a terror organization, even by your country. In October the 7th, the whole families were burned in their homes. Women were raped. Kids under 10 were kidnapped. So I don't know if I hope you agree with me. I don't know if any family would want to return to their home when you have this kind of organization on the border.
And that's perfectly understandable. Can you tell me what the opinion polls are showing in Israel about Netanyahu's conduct of this, particularly the Hezbollah side rather than Gaza? I mean, I think there have been very divided opinions about how the government have handled Gaza and the hostages. But in terms of whether there should be a ground invasion or not, I saw a poll the other day that showed that 87% of people said they thought there should be. Is that still the position?
Yeah, I believe strongly that this is the position. You need to understand that I think most of the opposition to Netanyahu is not necessarily about Gaza. Netanyahu had lots of opposition before the war, and it's really hard to distinct between opposition which is coming from you don't do enough, you know, in order to release the hostages, compared to opposition which is just there to oppose Netanyahu. I'm not saying this as a supporter of Netanyahu. I'm just saying this as like trying to do an objective analysis. And yes, most of the people of Israel believe that we should finish the job. This is what it is. It's finished the job. Like, it's a group which is almost dismantled. It was our biggest nightmare, much more than Hamas. There were like preparations in Israel for like weeks without power, stocking up on cans and toilet paper and water, like nightmare stories about Hezbollah. And the opportunity to remove these threats once and for all is like something that we cannot give up. I think one more point, and it's also reflecting on your conversation with Melissa. I don't know why people in the West are not doing this distinction, but if you will think about it, there is no reason for the fight with Hezbollah. There is no territorial dispute. There is no occupation. They are not even Palestinians. They are like Shiites coming from Lebanon. So I don't know. People don't like ask the question why there is even a fight between Hezbollah and Israel. So all the parameters that everybody said, October the 7th, that, you know, people giving reason to October the 7th because of settlements, because of occupations, because of territorial dispute, all these parameters are like completely not exist in Lebanon. This is a pure hate for the Jewish people in Israel. This is a pure hate and desire for destruction. Like, they destroyed their own country, like Lebanon, which were like the jewel of the Middle East back in the 60s, just for the sake of the destruction of Israel. No territorial dispute, nothing. There is no settlements, there is nothing. And I don't know, people don't do this like 1+1. You know what I mean? Like when I heard like Melissa talking about it.
Well, I'm afraid she represents quite a strong strand of opinion in this country. The kind of opinion that says that any country, unless it's one they really approve of, that's invaded, just should turn the other cheek and not respond. Well, that is not living in the real world.
Yeah, I and you said that we are becoming morally weak, and
yeah,
I completely understand what you're saying, because in Israel you always have perspective for life, right? Like all the small problems about, I don't know, if it's he or she, like everything become like really, really small compared to, you know, real life problem, and you're getting perspective. And this is something that probably since the end of World War II was almost forgotten by the Western countries. You are so used to peaceful times that people don't understand anymore that the people which are not part of the Western society, which are not part from the free world, from the way of this life, are not thinking the same. They are not playing by your rules. I if I may, I have like lots of like friends, colleagues, which are working in the U.S. and they talked to me a lot about October the 7th. They said how your intelligence managed to didn't catch October the 7th. How you were like so surprised. You are like the high tech nation and so forth and so on. And people don't understand that the October the 7th was not an intelligence failure. Like in the micro, it was intelligence failure. In the macro, it was a failure of understanding how the people on the other side are thinking. It's not about dehumanize the Gazan, is just misconceptions about their culture, their beliefs, their desires. Like we just completely missed out the way of thinking. We had, you know, like people who live next to the border on October, next to the border on Gaza, there was people over there who were like giving trips to Gaza and into Israeli hospitals to get cancer treatments. You have stories about people who invade to those kibbutzes, a father which invade to those kibbutz, murdered a member of family, of an Israeli family, where his kid was treated in Israel for cancer. Like, it's
Listen, Raphael, yeah. I've got a little bit of breaking news, so I'm going to leave it there, but keep listening. Thank you very much. And that breaking news is that the Lebanese army is withdrawing from the border with Israel tonight, which effectively means that Hezbollah are on their own militarily. We'll have more on that during the course of the programme. We have, of course, Cross Question coming up at 8 with Anne-Marie Trevelyan, the former Conservative MP and Cabinet Minister, Tom Skinner, founding partner of the PR agency Nexus, who's a former advisor to Michelle Donner during her time as Culture Secretary and Science Secretary, and Scarlett Maguire, the director of the polling company JL Partners. Number to call 0345 6060 973 if you would like to put a question to our panel. You're listening to LBC. It's 10 to 8.
LBC this morning on Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Kemi Badenoch sparking a furious row yesterday for suggesting that statutory maternity pay is excessive. Lisa's in Rochester. Is that right? You're on maternity leave now, Lisa?
Yes.
Oh, congratulations. How long ago did you have the baby?
Just under 4 months. He's 4 months tomorrow. So I think the point that people tend to kind of forget when they're talking about maternity pay and mums kind of getting quote unquote 3 months is we are literally creating the workforce that's going to be working in the next 20 to 30 years. So mums may now make a decision that, look, I can't afford to go on maternity pay or go on maternity leave. I can't afford to have children, which I think a lot of people are doing.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7.
With Betfair, where odds move faster than polls. Play responsibly.
LBC.
Are you an absolutely huge fonter or a zoom-inner? Perhaps you're an arm stretched out like a zombie when holding a newspaperer. Or a squint so tightly at the menu the waiter thinks you're sleeping. At Specsavers, we get it. You don't want to admit it's time to become a glasses wearer. That's okay. We're ready to see you whenever you're ready to see properly. Book an eye test at specsavers.co.uk so you can see clearer. Okay, we'll stop with the ears now.
When you run a small business, a handshake means a lot. They can be a greeting, an agreement, or a nice to see you. And whether they last too long or not long enough, they mean you're meeting with a Bob, not a bot. Some might be bone-crushing, others might be soft. However the handshake, at Metro Bank, we're always pleased to meet with you. Pop in and meet your local business manager. Metro Bank. Business to business. Face to face. Metro Bank is authorised and regulated by the FCA and PRA.
Does your printer need ink?
In a hurry?
Just think.
CartridgePeople.com.
For unbeatable prices, Cartridge People.
Printing.
Sorted. See online for our price promise.
As a caterpillar that unexpectedly woke up as a butterfly one morning, I thought nothing new could shock me. Then I had my first surprise cold shower.
Oh, freezing!
Luckily, I had Scottish Power Boiler Care, and an engineer was here in no time. With their new Boiler Care service promise, if you have no heating or hot water and tell them by 8 p.m, they'll send an engineer out by the end of the next working day, or you'll get £50. And sign up for selected Boiler Care by March 31st to get your first 3 months half price. Find out more at scottishpower.co.uk.
T's and C's apply. See scottishpower.co.uk. Service promise and 3 months half price offer until 31st of March 2025 on selected boiler care provided by Domestic in General.
Are you a glasses lifter-upper and peer underneather? Or perhaps a peep over the topper? You could even be a peek around the cider. Actually, forget that. It's impossible. Either way, at Specsavers, we get what you're up against. So why not come and see us about becoming a varifocaler? With varifocal lenses, you'll see close up, far away, and everything in between. And they're free, with a single pair of glasses from £70. Include standard varifocal lenses only. Conditions apply. Ask in store for details.
Ian Dale. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Lots of reaction to Raphael's call there. This is from Olive, who says, the Israeli gentleman just now has spoken nothing but utter sense. We are weak and have too much of an easy life. Sharik says, Raphael's call from Tel Aviv is most instructive about what people on the ground are actually thinking. And Stephen says, just to say what a fantastic call from Raphael that was. Not enough of real-life perspective on our mainstream media. We don't hear enough of this. Well, I always encourage people to phone in from Israel, whether they are Israeli or Arab-Israeli or Palestinian. I love to hear from people in the region because it is so easy sometimes to just rely on what you see or hear in the media in this country, which sometimes isn't representative of what people actually on the ground think. So we'll continue to do that. Now, before we come to tonight's cross question, let's hear a little of the latest episode of the For the Many podcast. My guest co-host for this one is the former Conservative Cabinet Minister, Gillian Keegan. She told me about Rishi Sunak surprising her and other Cabinet colleagues back at the end of May by telling them he'd called a general election. Surely I think he should have at least told his senior ministers before he'd set the wheels in motion.
Well, he didn't do that, and he had been to the palace, he had told the king, they had put the lectern outside, he told us, and he had had spoken to a couple of people and asked them to speak before, to support him, so they said they're supportive, you know, this is as good a time as any kind of thing. None of us believed that, I think. None of us could understand why we were going right then. And then Esther said, well, you know, go and tell them something else. I said, he's been to tell the king, you can't not do it now, right? But it was a surprise. Well, no, it wasn't a complete surprise because there'd been rumours about it that week.
Yeah.
But you know what it's like in Parliament. There's always rumours and only half of them are true. It's like advertising, you just don't know which half is right and or working. So there had been rumours and it was an odd time for a cabinet meeting, if I remember. The schedule had changed as well. There was a reason why that had happened. So, but it was a done deal. And then, obviously, we all had to sit and watch whilst he went out. And then it started and I couldn't believe it. We're all sat there. And I said, just turn around and say, well, at least I'm not a fair weather politician, or tell the fella at the top to put It's Raining Men or something on. You know, he's got the old tune on, put something else. You know, you can come up with something to say when you don't just pretend it's not raining and there isn't a guy sort of playing.
But I wonder whether he realised, because, I mean, obviously we could all see his suit looks absolutely sodden through.
Mm.
But, I mean, I'm sure it's a very thick suit, so maybe he didn't quite realise at the time. I don't know.
Possibly not. Although, I mean, even though he's obviously got a good head of hair, you would know it's raining, yeah, right? I mean, right. It wasn't like just soft rain. Yeah. It was raining. I mean, he looks good in rain. I think you could say that. I mean, his hair didn't move. I would literally look like Kevin Keegan. I would literally I'd have a perm in front of your eyes. My hair would be getting curlier and curlier and curlier. So, no, I wouldn't have died. I'd have put a hat on or something. But it was unfortunate. And then, obviously, that was the start of the campaign, which I don't know whether the campaign ever could have made up the 20 points, right? But certainly the campaign didn't go well at all, right? You know, everything that could have gone wrong pretty much went wrong.
So the day after you've lost,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you either view that as a really real threat to the rest of your life, you can wallow in self-pity, or you think, okay, well, I'm still of an age where I can have another career, or I want to go, I'm going to try and get back into Parliament. How did you process all of that?
I am a super pragmatic person, always have been. And I thought to myself, you know what? You've had a career that you never thought you were going to have. you never thought you'd be an MP. And when I became an MP, I never thought I'd be a minister. And when I became a minister, I never thought I'd be a cabinet minister.
I did.
Well, I guess...
I was the only one to predict in that reshuffle that you'd get a cabinet post. None of the other journalists did.
No, and I was surprised as well. And actually, Rishi said to me when I went in, he said, this is going to be the highlight of my day. He said, it could even be the highlight of my career, because I know you're not expecting this at all. Everybody else is positioning for things and you're not expecting this at all. Will you be my education secretary? I was like, wow, I mean, that is... And I tell you, the reason you know I wasn't expecting it is I hadn't washed my hair and I had flat shoes on. And I, you know...
Just as well it wasn't raining. Eh?
I thought I'd get back to a minister of state, because I had been a minister of state and then got demoted. I thought maybe I'd get back to that. So I guess when you're in that position, you just feel incredibly grateful. You know, none of my life did I ever feel I'd be getting these opportunities. So I don't feel at all, no bitterness. I'm incredibly grateful that I did it. And I got to do something that not many people do.
So that's the former Tory Cabinet Minister, Gillian Keegan, who's my guest co-host for that episode of For the Many. You can download it around 1 o'clock this morning, or tomorrow morning, rather. Now, coming up on Cross Question in a moment is we have Anne-Marie Trevelyan, the former Conservative MP and Cabinet Minister, Tom Skinner, founding partner of the public relations agency Nexus, former special advisor to a Cabinet Minister in the Rishi Sunak government, and Scarlett Maguire, director of the polling company JL Partners. They are here to take your calls. So many things to ask them about today. Tory leadership, Israel, and a lot of other things. 0345 6060 973. You can WhatsApp on that number and do watch us on Global Player.
On your radio, on Global Player, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock. Israel's defense minister says the next stage of the war against Hezbollah will begin soon, while the Iranian-backed group says it's expecting an imminent ground invasion. Joe Biden has renewed calls for a ceasefire and also confirmed he's sending a few thousand additional troops to the Middle East. The Conservatives' former Middle East and North Africa minister, Tobias Elwood, has been talking to Ian Dale on LBC.
There'll be huge consequences if Iran gets involved, which I think they now will do, and as well as the Houthis in Yemen. We'll see the Red Sea likely close down again, and the Straits of Hormuz, where a third of the world's oil comes out as well.
Teachers at the UK's biggest education union have accepted a new pay offer. Members of the NEU will now receive a 5.5% pay rise. The UK's most senior civil servant has announced he's standing down at the end of the year on health grounds. The Cabinet Secretary Simon Case has told colleagues he has a neurological condition. And the French far-right leader Marine Le Pen has gone on trial alongside other officials from her party, accused of embezzling funds from the European Parliament. She denies violating any rules. In the city, the FTSE 100 has closed down 50 points at 82.70. The pound will buy $1.33 and €1.19. LBC weather staying wet and windy in the east of England overnight, drier with clear spells elsewhere, and a low of 3 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Tim Daly.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation. Cross Question with Ian Dale.
Hello, a very good evening. It's 2 minutes past eight here on LBC. Welcome to Monday's Cross Question. Our panel tonight, Anne-Marie Trevelyan is former Conservative MP and Cabinet Minister, served in the Foreign Office, so she will have some interesting things to say. Should anyone want to phone in about Israel, I mean, who knows? Nobody may. Tom Skinner, founding partner of the Public Relations Agency.